We play and call it work.
Hey everybody, Matthew here from AnyWarGaming.com, and welcome to this week's, that's the word, Sit and Talk. I will be your host today, answering your questions that you posted on last week's Sit and Talk. Next week will be Josh. So if you want to leave questions for Josh, leave them in the comments below. Unless you're watching this on YouTube, then click the link to go to our site to leave them there. Just easier for us to print them off. And I'll just jump right into this. Flip Mode SH. Matt, I think Josh's productivity is held back by having to use a handheld mic. Would the company pay to have his beard wired for sound? What other cybernetic enhancements would you impose on the staff? Well, depends. It's a pretty complex procedure. Like that's a pretty big beard. Now, he's recently trimmed some of it, but it's still pretty long. So wiring it could produce some complications. But I think in the end, the handheld mic will work. Cybernetic enhancements, in other places, I think if I were to do that, what would I do? Well, Chris would definitely get some sort of ocular implant that would allow him to zoom in on the models more so he can do an even better job. And while he probably doesn't need it a lot, just something to replace his arm and his hands so that he has like super steady hands. I'm pretty sure they're pretty steady as they are, but can't be as steady as a robot, right? Right? And then for Justin, well, everybody always talks about like what in 40K everything is, and he's of course our servitor. And so that means we just have to basically gut him of all those unnecessary organs, like stomachs and livers and hearts and kidneys, all that kind of stuff. And just leave the brain function and just add on some limbs so he can more efficiently answer your questions and customer support, add content, ship any orders that he needs to. And then we'll have to put a track system in, of course, the whole office so he can zip around. So that's what we do there. Other cybernetic implants. If I could have a cybernetic implant, what would it be? Probably be new eyes as well, because I'm tired of glasses. Although recently I finally got them fixed. If you've ever been bothered by the fact that they're always a little crooked, I finally went into a place to get them fixed, and they did it in like 2 minutes. If I realized it would have been that easy, I would have done it a long time ago. So, yeah. Jedi22, Matt, as far as I'm aware, I haven't seen you play Warhammer Fantasy or Age of Sigmar. Is there a reason? If you do, what is your army? And would you consider playing Triumph and Trumpery? Okay. I'll just go back to that. No, I do not currently play Warhammer Fantasy and Age of Sigmar. I have played Fantasy in the past. I used to actually be the one to cover Fantasy content for AnyWarGaming back when it was mostly just Dave and I making content. So that would be like 7th edition. I think I played 6th edition and 7th edition. I haven't played 8th edition. When it switched over, I wasn't currently covering it. And I've played half a game of Age of Sigmar. There was a day that we had some time free, and so I had the guys just start teaching me, but unfortunately we didn't have time to finish the game. So I can't really give a full report on how I even feel about it because I was just getting to know the game. And you really have to play a game a few times before you can have a good feel whether you even like the game or not. What are the reasons? It's simple. Very, 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 very simple. I don't have time. I really don't have time. My filming schedule is quite packed, just getting the stuff done that I need to. I'm not sure if you know this, but in order for us to do a Warhammer 40K battle report, one game takes us one day of filming. Now, that might sound like a long time because you can probably get a game done in like a couple hours or 3 hours if it's a bigger one. But when you add in filming and dealing with like the volunteers that come in and then building your lists, making sure the lists are good, setting up good terrain, and then the actual filming of it, it can take a long time. It doesn't necessarily take a full day. There's a very rare game that takes a full day. Those are usually the ones. And you know, basically, if you look at the length of the battle report, if the battle report itself was like 2 hours, then you know that one probably took us all day to film. But most of the time, we ask the volunteers to come in by like 9:30, and we're usually done by like 2:30, 3 o'clock. Back in the day, we actually did try to get 2 40K battle reports done in one day, and it is possible, but typically what end up happening is that you have a 1,500-point game and a 1,000-point game. You don't have time for pre-games, you don't have time for post-games, and on that rare chance that those games take a lot longer, then you don't even have time for a second game. We switched over to one game a day to help a few things, so we can actually create pre-games and post-games so we could relax and enjoy the game a lot more, which I think really does show through on the quality. It does increase the cost, of course, but I think it's worth it. So that means when you see me do a pairing of beatmap bat reps, that took me 2 days to film that. And then on top of that, what you don't see is just how often we're filming the other stuff, like the narrative campaigns. Basically, for the past month or two, I've been filming in studios on average 3 or 4 days a week. And since I only work 5 days a week and I run the business, I need to be available for other stuff as well. And so basically, I'm totally tapped out for the amount of filming that I could possibly do. Now I do try to rotate what I do, so I'm doing 40K or 30K. I do narrative campaigns, looking at other stuff that we're going to be doing in the fall and winter as well. But really, adding another game that's not like a 40K-ish game, like adding 30K, not a big deal. There's things to learn, but the game structure itself is there. Adding like playing like a season of Gorka Morka, that was almost like a totally new game. But once again, because it's within the 40K universe, I could borrow in a lot of the knowledge that I already have. So, or things like we end up covering, things like Battlefleet Gothic or other smaller games. Those are a lot easier to learn, a lot quicker to learn. But a full-on game like Fantasy or Age of Sigmar, I just can't see myself covering, even if I really wanted to. And I can't say right now that I would really want to, but that's not because it's not a good game. It's simply because I haven't really given it a shot, and I just can't. So that's the big thing. The other guys, if in an ideal circumstance, no one employee would have to play more than two games at most, for lots of reasons. One being, it's hard to keep the rules straight when you're playing different games, especially when it's a game like Fantasy and 40K, where they use a lot of the same terminology, but the game actually works differently, and so there can be little nuances that can just get stuck in your head and cause you to do things wrong. Bill Drett, Matt, it has been a while since the last Matthew's Thoughts video. Did you stop having thoughts? Don't have time for thoughts. I gotta do battle reports and narrative campaigns. I still intend to do more of those. It was more just every once in a while I get an idea for a show and it's something that I just film really quickly. Like I would film like three or four of those in a day, and then when they'd come out for a month, and then when I feel like doing them again, I would do them. It wasn't ever meant to be a regular show, especially because there wasn't usually like a vault component, and so it wasn't really a money-making show. It was more just a way for me to, like this show, kind of connect and just talk about things that I want to talk about. So, like for example, Book 9 I've ordered for the Beast Arises series, and that'll be coming out soon. But I might talk about that. I might switch over, maybe start posting some articles on our website instead, so I can kind of do it on my own time, rather than having to record it. I also noticed that I think if I'm going to continue doing Matthew's Thoughts, I'd actually have somebody else with me, which is funny because it's not just Matthew's Thoughts. It's because I do a better job when I have somebody else to talk to. At least sit and talk is fine. I have lots of little questions just to answer. But when all of a sudden I have to like talk for 10, 15 minutes without somebody to bounce things off of, it's not quite as fun as I'd like it to be. And that was the intent of that show. It's just something for me to be able to have some fun with. Chris Nihilis. Hey Matt, Age of Sigmar exploded after the General's Handbook came out. I see so many new players and forums chats have grown at some amazing rate. Do you feel the same effect in views and subscriptions regarding Age of Sigmar videos? And do you plan on expanding on the game more, like dedicated campaigns and more time? First off, it's hard to know. I don't disagree with the fact that you think that it's exploded. But it's really hard to know whether it actually has. There can be a lot of perception. Like, for example, if you've all of a sudden gained more interest and you're on the forums more, then you see all these other people who are on there more. And that can give not a perfect perception of what reality actually is. But I do think it's doing better. I think the General's Handbook was a good thing. Yeah, did I see the same effect in views and subscriptions? That's hard to say because we stopped doing Age of Sigmar for about a month once we heard the General's Handbook was coming out, because it was just hard to film a game that had no real structure to it. And so we stopped filming it and instead did a fill-in series of Mordheim just to kind of hold off until we did it. And so all our new Age of Sigmar videos, which are reviews and battle reports, have been doing very well. Lots of good views, lots of vault signups, and so it's making me think that the future of Age of Sigmar on Mini Wargaming is secure, which I wasn't sure of like just a couple months ago. We were thinking we weren't sure how well it would be doing. Same thing with Fantasy 8th Edition, still doing very well as well, in case you have a question about that. It's not that Age of Sigmar is going to replace it. So we do plan on putting more time into it. Steve already has been. It's tricky because it takes a lot of time to get all the filming done, but hoping to have weekly Age of Sigmar content as well. Campaigns and stuff, definitely a possibility in the future as well. It's something that we want to do. All right. Toby P. Hey, Matt. Of all your battle reports, what one stands out as your most memorable? I've had this question a few times, and it's hard to say because they all blend together. There's some that it's the more recent ones that I can think of. Like, for example, I did a 30K battle report against Steve. It was with my Solar Exilia against his Iron Warriors, and it was tremendously fun. It was just so much fun. It was down to the wire. It was a very close game. It was a lot of fun. And just recently, I did another 30K game. It's not out yet. against, I don't think it's out yet, it's against Night Lords with my Solar Exilia once again. I actually really like the Solar Exilia. They're a lot of fun to play. And once again, the game itself was interesting, and then near the end got super fun and super close and super interesting. And I really enjoyed that too. So it's, but it's hard to pick out just one because I play so many games, and so it's not like there's one that's like the perfect. There's good games and there's not so good games. But overall, I enjoy myself with all of them. And that's not me like trying to pick a favorite kid. It's more just honestly, like it's they're just there's a lot of them that are really good. Fatty McSnipes. Matt, you have too many employees that haven't played Dungeons & Dragons or other tabletop RPGs. You need to show them the glory of D&D and film it, please. Who hasn't played tabletop RPGs? I think Steve hasn't. But I can't imagine that the majority of the other guys haven't at least had a taste of it. But I don't know. They're not around today. Most of them are out filming. And so I can't just shout it out and see who has and who hasn't. The Uninvisible Man, 1. Matt, I've heard you guys mention that you use Army Builder and Battlescribe apps sometimes when building your list. How do you feel these tools compare to writing it all down on a piece of paper? And do you believe there's a market for GW to release a similar product? I don't like writing on a piece of paper. I actually hate doing that. I 100% prefer using an Army list building. You can't say Army Builder because Army Builder is trademarked. A product like Army Builder or Battlescribe, and I like both of them. At first, I liked Army Builder better because I was used to it, but now I'm liking Battlescribe a lot more because it seems to get updated a lot quicker. But I do like the structure of how Army Builder works. It's just the one thing you have to remember when you're using these is that they're user-driven databases for the actual rules that are in them, and they're often wrong. I don't mean like most of the stuff in them is wrong. It's more like if you build a 2,000-point list, there's probably something in there that's wrong. And so you need to always double-check your rules and don't just rely on Battlescribe or Army Builder for that, which is a good thing because you should always own the codex as well, whether it's digital or whether it's a physical copy. Do I believe there's a market for GW to release a similar product? Well, they kind of did. Not really. At the end of each of their enhanced codexes, you have your list-building thing at the end. I hate it. It's awful. Doesn't do anything good for you. And it's totally useless. But should they make one of their own? Yeah, I think so. Even if it's free, it could be really useful. They can still reference pages in the rule books that you have to look things up. But like I know Infinity had a free one. I don't know if they still do, but I remember using it. I'm sure they still do. But when they came up with their new version, whether it's out or not yet, I don't know. But no, I think they should. In fact, I think they have it for Age of Sigmar. They have a digital version of it, so it makes sense because then they can keep things up to date and the rules should theoretically be right, although I know that errors can still get in there. I see that in some of their digital books, so it is possible as well. But yeah, they should. Chosen One, Matthew, holy crumbly cakes, man. The new narrative campaign is mind-blowingly amazing. Well, thank you very much. Wednesdays have a purpose again. I tried to do something constructive and watch it in the background, and I couldn't. The Tyrus incident is better than most television, in my entirely sincere opinion. Well, thank you very much. That's a very high compliment. Question-wise, I have two. For the first, what is the weirdest thing you have ever found in the Mini Wargaming office? I remember well the warp orange, the orange we found behind the fridge that was like totally dried out. For the second, why do you think you get so many strange questions on the Sit and Talks? For glory and gummy worms, Chosen One. Weirdest things I've ever found in the Mini Wargaming office. Like, if we're talking seriously, if I'm not making stuff up, like not just being silly. The orange was definitely weird. I don't know. I don't know if I have an interesting answer for you for that. Weirdest thing I've ever found in the office. I don't know, because when you play the miniature war games, you get everything's kind of weird. No, sorry, I don't have an interesting answer for that. And why do I think I get so many strange questions on the Sit and Talks? Because people like to be interesting. And so when they get a chance to express themselves, they always try to be funny or interesting. Sometimes they fail. Sometimes they succeed. Fleshcraft. Matt, would you consider buying Forge World-specific armies such as Death Court of Krieg? Of course. I know they are extremely expensive. However, Horus Heresy armies such as Solar Exilia or Mechanicum are expensive too. I think armies that are exotic and rare and rarely seen would attract a lot of attention from the viewers. Oh, we definitely would. We, in the past couple of years, or 2 or 3 years, we've really ramped up our collection of miniatures, adding more and more armies. We pretty much cover all of the major armies. What we don't cover are all the different Space Marine chapters in 40K. Like, we've got a good Ultramarines army. We've got a half-decent White Scars army. We've got a little bit of Imperial Fist. And then, of course, we have the Sentinels of the Forge, which is the mini Wargaming Space Marine chapter, which is the Salamander successor chapter, or whatever we end up having it be a successor to when we're just playing one-off games. And that one, we have a lot of points. And so that's four different chapters, three official, one unofficial. And then we have, of course, the Blood Angels and the Space Wolves, although they are kind of their own books. So if we were like talking about like just different chapters within the same codex, then we still have a few that we need to cover there. And then all the Xenos races we have, we could expand on a few of them. Orcs in particular could have, there's a lot of gaps that could be filled there. We've got the Necron, Tau, Eldar, and then Steve, of course, has the Dark Eldar. So we're covered pretty well. And so really we've been expanding into the Horus Heresy when it comes to, you know, Warhammer 40K, or in this case, Horus Heresy 30K. And so there's still a lot of gaps there. So would I consider it? Sure. What would I would really consider, what would make me want to get it, is one of two things. One, either somebody in the office really wants to play them, and they're going to be big into it, and so it's worth getting. Or number two, somebody has a Death Corps of Krieg army, and they're trying to get rid of it, and it's a half-decent price. Then that would make me want to buy it as well. Grimjall! Matt, hello. I've noticed you have various novels on the shelf in your office. I was wondering if you've read any Caiaphas Kane. I have. I think there's... Oh, no, it's not there. Caiaphas Kane, I have. I read the For the Emperor one, the one with the Gene Stealer cult and the Tau. It was great. It was really fun. Or Priests of Mars novel. I haven't read those. Most of what I've read... no, I guess it's not all here. I've read the Ravener Omnibus. I've read the Gaunt's Ghosts Omnibus. I've read the first eight books of the Beast Arises. I've read the first three or four Horus Heresy novels, I think. And what else have I read? I've read a couple other things here and there. Some of the stuff is awesome, and some of the stuff is awful, and some of the stuff is mediocre. That's what happens when you have a range of authors writing your fluff. And I don't hold it against Games Workshop for doing it that way, because they can't all be Dan Abnett's. And it's better for them just to produce a lot of these books to help develop their lore and their universe. Kind of like how they've been giving their IP for their computer games to a lot of developers rather than just a couple of really good ones. I hope that they start to get their IP into movies as well. But I know there's problems with movies. Like recently I've read stuff, I can't remember where, but it became, it was like one of those, oh yeah, I guess that's something to think about. That people say, well, you should give your IP in so that to Hollywood somewhere so they can make an awesome movie. But the problem is, one of the big money makers for movies is the merchandise, which would, of course, be toys, but they sell those as miniatures. I know you could have a different kind of toy, it doesn't have to be miniatures, but it would kind of, all of a sudden, the intellectual property would get very confusing. And so I can see why they haven't done that yet. Computer games, on the other hand, the licensing is not all about merchandise afterwards. Of course, some of them do merchandise, but that's not their main money maker. Their money making is in selling the game and maybe in-app purchases or whatever happens to be, or DLC or sequels or whatever. And so I've been glad to see them do a lot of those, even if some of them turn out to be garbage, like Eisenhorn, or I could name like a bunch. But then there's a few gems, like I've been playing the Battlefleet Gothic app, which is really good. The one that actually like recreates the tabletop game. And then you have some of the other games that are good too, so... So I've read the one Caiaphas Kane novel, and then I haven't read the Priest of Mars novels, though. Alan Trollett, are you guys considering doing a live stream sometime in the future? We used to do live streams a lot more, and it just was a lot of work, and they weren't necessarily producing really any results for us. However, at the same time, Chris does do a weekly live stream. He doesn't do it as part of Mini Wargaming. He does it as his own thing, Way of the Brush, although we do support him in that. That you can see it there. So you can check that out. Way of the Brush is what it's called. It streams on YouTube. Not through our channel, though, through his own. But live streaming, I get its appeal, and it's really good for computer gaming and other stuff as well. There's probably a market for it with miniature wargaming, but my mind can't wrap around how to take it and monetize it. That's the big thing as a business. You want to monetize it. And so... having something live, it reduces the number of people that can watch it. I know they can see it afterwards, but part of it is about that. So we've done it in the past, and it's hard. And we're a 9-to-5 company, like Monday to Friday, 9-to-5. And typically live streaming works better in the evening when it comes to Eastern Standard Time, or at least sometime later in the afternoon so that you hit the right time for like the, for Europeans and for Pacific Standard Time and all that, or Pacific Time and all that. So it's that sweet spot is just either cuts into our day or is right outside of our normal work day. And we just don't want to change that. So live streaming is not really something in our sights right now. Sir Knight of Ender. Matt, can anyone solve a Rubik's Cube? There are a lot of people that can solve Rubik's Cubes. You can actually go on YouTube and see all the people who can solve them really fast, blindfolded, behind their back, all this. I know what you're probably asking, is anybody here at Mini Wargaming? But I'm being facetious. And here, I don't think so. I have never seen anybody play with a Rubik's Cube. And that's kind of one of those things that once you can do it, you want to show all your friends that you can do it just to show off your awesomely useless talent. But it's kind of fun anyway, so why not? Daka Daka Boom Boom. Hiya, Matt. How are you, sir? I am very well. Daka Daka Boom Boom. Loving the new campaign you're doing with Josh. Nids make great enemies. I think maybe because you can't reason or communicate with them. They make terrifying enemies, but the ones that you're going to watch in this one are even different than that. Would you consider a guard versus Nid campaign, maybe with a little Death Watch thrown in, perhaps set on a Space Hulk or something? Please. Cheers. I get requests like crazy, and there's an almost infinite number of possible matchups, because there's so many different races that you can have, and then subspecies within that are sub-chapters or sub-factions. And then when you start throwing in a third, that's even more permutations. Guards versus Nids, you can get that already. We did a campaign called Storms of Ixia, which is Nids, Guard, and Orcs. And it was a really good one, but the main players were Nids and Guard. Well, I guess the Orcs are a pretty big player too. All three of them around equally. But the protagonists were the Imperial Guards. That's where we actually had Commissar... So, how on earth would I forget his name? Not Crucian. How did I forget that guy's name? Lord Commissar. He was like a beast in the whole thing. Khrushchev, thank you. I was going to say Crucian, but that's from Dave's 40K Rejects. Khrushchev. He was born in that one. So even though it's older rules, the narrative's still there, and it's a lot of fun. So that one had Nids and Guard. And then we had the Utgard Infestation, which was Gene Stealer Cult versus Sisters of Battle, so that's kind of like your people versus the Nids as well. Also, get revenge on Dave for tickling you. He's not here, unfortunately. I'm also inflicted with this weakness. Prank call, wet willy, don't let him get away with it. I'll consider that. Swiss Toby. Matt, question of the history of Mini Wargaming. When was the first time that you guys had the idea to start a business? What were the first goals, ideas, and visions for your business? I have talked about this in the past, but it's been a while, so I'll give you a good answer to that. We had the idea to do the business right before we did the business, so about 9 years ago. We don't have an exact anniversary. We've set it to be quasi end of September. I think like the miniwargaming.com domain name was registered in like June 9 years ago. And then our first video wasn't until the following January, but our first blog post was before that, and our store was open before that too. So, you know, we kind of had worked on it a little bit by little bit. What had happened is I had been running a marketing business of my own, so I had some business and marketing experience, and Dave had been running a landscaping business of his own, but while he was making money with it, he didn't like the physical toll it was having on his body. Because he doesn't have that great a back, actually. He's actually got a pretty bad back, and so he's got to be careful with that. And so he came to me, and we're good friends, and known each other for a long time, and he knew I was into business and marketing, and he's like, I've got to do a business together. I don't want to do landscaping anymore. And so we talked about it, and we had just recently gotten to Lord of the Rings strategy battle game from Games Workshop, like recently, as in like 3 months before. I think I got into it like the May or something. And we said, well, in my marketing, I've been learning a lot about e-commerce and a lot about video marketing, which back then was not yet a big thing. YouTube was still in its infancy, and there's still possibilities that other sites could overtake YouTube. And so I thought, and Dave loves acting. He's always wanted to be an actor. And so I thought, well, I've got the marketing and the technological know-how. I know how to make the website. I have all that kind of stuff. And I've got the idea for the e-commerce site of selling this Warhammer stuff. And hey, we get it at a discount as well. We've been buying lots of it. And he loves to act, so let's get you in front of the video camera. And you can just be the face of the business. At first, I wasn't even going to show up in the business at all. That wasn't until a few months later. And we'll just go with that. And that's basically where it came from. And then we just tried it. And it was hard. We didn't really make money for the first while, like years. We brought in money, like revenue, but making money is different than earning revenue. And several times we wanted to close down, but thankfully we never did. And I'd say it took us about 5 or 6 years to really get it off the ground. And now here we are. So there's the brief Coles Notes version of the history of Mini Wargaming. And to answer your question about the first goals and ideas of visions, it was pretty simple. We wanted to have an e-commerce store where we'd sell lots of stuff and become millionaires doing that. And the way we would get people to our store is through being the best at the Google search engine optimization and also through the video marketing. So obviously that's evolved over the years to what it is now. Asmodays, Matt. Steve said he would be a great ruler of Earth because he could make decisions for the greater good. Is Steve actually part of the Tau Empire? Does Dave know this? Side note, thanks for keeping up the campaigns and allowing Age of Sigmar to come back. I don't know. Steve making a great ruler of Earth? I'm not sure about the rules that he'd put in place would be for the greater good, unless he considers himself to be the greater good. There's that one movie, Ants, came out at the same time as like Bug's Life, and so it's like, why did both these movies have like almost exactly the same idea? And the one ant colonel was always like, it's for the greater of the colony, it's for the good of the colony, it's for the good of the colony. He kept saying this, and then near the end of the movie, he shouts out, I am the colony! And so he realizes what he's really saying, it's for me. So I think Steve would be more like that. He'd be like, it's for the greater good, it's for the greater good. I am your greater good. I'm the greatest good you've ever had. Quote from Incredibles right there. So yeah. And you're welcome for the campaigns. And allowing Age of Sigmar to come back, hey, it's as simple as let's put it out. And if people like it, it's popular, it gets views, and more particularly vault signups, then I will continue funding that and keep doing that until people don't sign up anymore. Buckaroo 13. Matt, have you backed any miniature or terrain Kickstarters? And what are your thoughts on gaming Kickstarters in general? Great work with Mini Wargaming and content is only getting better and better. Thank you. Yes, I have, actually. I've backed a few Kickstarters. I don't always remember which ones they are because they take so long to come out. Because some of them I've backed and some of them I get the stuff for free because we promote them. And so I can't remember which ones I've backed and which ones... I know This Is Not a Test, that post-apocalyptic miniature game. I backed that. And so I'll be getting the book and the miniatures when they do come out. What are my thoughts? I think Kickstarter is great. I think at first people had a problem with companies using Kickstarter more as a pre-order system. Like you see Cool Mini are not doing that a lot. What they do is they actually put all their own money into it and bring it up to the point where they can basically release it. And then they run a Kickstarter and they're like, our goal is $50,000 and they raise $2 million. I used to have a problem with that, but now I'm like, no, it's just become what it is. It's found its niche, which is both using it as a pre-order platform, but it's kind of the way it's marketed that makes people feel different about how they're buying it. And there's a lot of social proof there as well. And then there's the other companies that are legit using it as a Kickstarter, which obviously the intent there is that, hey, I've got an idea and I've got the ability, but I don't have the money, so I need you to help me crowdfund that. And so there's a difference between the crowdfunding. Like, I don't think like the companies like Cool Mini or not, or the other ones that basically have a product already done, and then they're just giving you pre-orders. That's not crowdfunding so much as it is just a pre-order system. Crowdfunding is more like, I couldn't do this without this money from Kickstarter. I couldn't get it to the point where I do. So that's what it's more used for. And so, but I really think it's a great system that's allowed a lot of indie games companies like Cool Mini or not to really flourish, and we get to see people just having fun with that. I also think it has a lot of drawbacks. Obviously, there's a hefty percentage that Kickstarter or Indiegogo take, so that's money that could have gone to the companies. But hey, that's kind of the cost of just being able to get that kind of advertising. And also, it tends to be that, you know, it takes a long time to get your stuff from these because they're so far in advance before they're actually even ready for production. So that's kind of annoying as a backer, because you can kind of lose that steam. It's kind of like StarCraft II. They announced it like 3 years before it came out. And so by the time it came out, it was just like, holy cow. It did really well. So that that's not a problem. But I remember when I got disappointed because when I played StarCraft II, it was a great game. But by that point, I had pretty much seen everything in it. They had released so many trailers and gameplay things that I pretty much had seen the whole game, like 90% of it. And I don't appreciate trailers that basically show me the whole movie minus the very, very ending. And so I've stopped watching trailers for Blizzard games. I just buy them when they come out, if it's something I'm interested in. So you kind of have that disadvantage. I prefer like trailers to come out and content to be shown shortly before it's going to be released. And I don't mean like a week or two. Like months is fine, but not like a year or two, because then you kind of forget how much you're interested in that. How are we doing for time? Oh, our time is up for the free part of the Sit and Talk. If you want to continue hearing me answer your questions, then click on the link in the video description below to go to the Sit and Vault, where I'll continue answering. Thanks for watching. I'll see you in the next video.